The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
Okay, good to practice with you. Just before I left to come teach, I was with my 11-year-old nephew. And I said, I gotta go. You're going to teach. Give me a pep talk. You know, he's like, what? I'm like, yeah, okay. We're like, it's bottom of the sixth inning baseball. He's baseball. Bottom of the sixth. There's a run. We're down one run. Runner on third. I'm at bat. What do you say to me? Give me the pep talk. And he said, You're going to strike out. Told him I'd remember that, keeping tabs, these kind of brutal assaults on my dignity. So, so it's a good thing to, cultivate the capacity, no matter how robust, but the capacity to have well-being independent of conditions. It's one way of talking about freedom. And I was recently on retreat, and we got a question asking why we, the teachers, weren't speaking more explicitly about awakening. And so I thought to try to speak to that. What are the pros and cons of being explicit about awakening? And what are the benefits and complexities of such a discussion? And it's worth just checking in right now. What does that word do to your mind? Does it uplift or confront or inspire, or does the mind become dense with self as we contemplate awakening? And of course, the Buddha was not shy. It was striking how forthright and frequently liberation was discussed. This beautiful quote from the Majjhima Nikaya: the purpose of the holy life does not consist in acquiring benefits, honor, or fame, nor in gaining virtue, states of concentration, nor insight, or the eye of knowledge. The unshakable deliverance of heart, the sure heart's release, this and this alone is the object of the holy life. Its essence, its true goal. So the first piece to say is about context, that we talk about Dharma in groups and we talk one-on-one. And in speaking to a group, the teacher is attempting to say things that maximize benefit, that lead to the greatest benefit and minimizes mischief. And that's a complex calculation, keeps us on our toes all the time, because every teaching can be wielded by our wisdom or by our bad habits. And in speaking one-on-one with somebody, the conversation can be quite different and the calculations are simpler and there might be higher levels of disclosure and more explicit conversations. You're meeting the needs of that person rather than calibrating to a kind of group process. And yet much of the Dharma happens in the group context, and I still feel like there are genuine benefits to speaking about freedom, about awakening. And it's real. Most change is gradual, but not all change. So there are kind of inflection points that, decisively alter this, spiritual trajectory of one person's life. And not from the Buddhist tradition, of course, but Jung described huge emotional displacements and rearrangements, ideas, emotions, and attitudes, which were once the guiding forces of the lives of these people, are suddenly cast to one side, and a completely new set of conceptions and motives begin to dominate them. That's a kind of characterization of, sometimes described as in psychology, quantum changes. Now, not speaking about awakening may erode people's confidence in themselves or make it seem like some mythical thing. And I remember a teacher I sat with for many years, Shinzen Yang, saying, "Don't get stuck in a good place. Sometimes happiness, some of the fruit of practice, can breed a measure of complacency." Not all aspiration generates grasping and craving and clinging, striving. Often does, but not always. Not always. Sometimes we can hold some aspiration and not be deformed by the desperate, self-driven striving. Jesse Vega Fry asked this question to this revered Burmese teacher. He said, on the one hand, there's spiritual urgency, samvega. On the other hand, there's patience. So there's like real urgency and patience. And it's like, how do these two fit together? And Sayadaw's response was, you should have samvega and patience. No problem. Not all aspiration is drenched in self-view. Some longings do emerge from the heart, and they tend to be kind of vaguer, less transactional. They're outside of the logic of self. And an explicit focus on awakening can help us stop tinkering with our conditioning. It can help us cut through the tendency to just keep making small modifications to this self model rather than step out. Zhiger Kangchul Rinpoche said, you want to keep rearranging the furniture of your dream or wake up. And it's important for us to know that much of what we consider the first arrow is the second, and that we might know forms of peace and well-being that we haven't really imagined, hard to imagine. That this world is so overflowing with mystery, majesty, makes you want to bow down. And there are complications. And so complications about talking explicitly about awakening. And in a way, I want to respect the many different fruits of Dharma practice and not elevate awakening in such a way that it's the only fruit that matters. This is maybe me personally, but I'm sort of equally touched by many kinds of letting go, many kinds of healing. And sometimes the most, beautiful growth comes when just huge chunks of psychological conditioning fall away. And it's not awakening, but every bit as beautiful to my mind. And talking about awakening is very tricky because it's almost always maybe the default kind of way of approaching it. It's envisioned from the perspective of self-view. And that it becomes a kind of we can't imagine it as anything but a kind of accoutrement of this self. An awakening seems like a kind of the solution to one's problems rather than a kaleidoscopic shift in which our quote problems appear entirely differently. And generally speaking, the people who have awakening experiences do not care narrowly about awakening. They care about truth and renunciation and awareness and honoring, an expression of reverence for the exquisite beauty of the Dharma. They care about love. They don't even care what they learn, how they're changed, what they get. They're simply walking a path. And all the gifts are almost incidental. And so deeper freedom is not, it's not a transaction. It's a very deep suspension of the bartering mode of existence. And it's tricky to talk about awakening because you're talking to a self, but it's not you, the one planning the progress that inherits the progress. And that self is long gone once there's progress. And causality is complex. It's hard to know. It's hard to draw straight lines from one insight, one process in the heart. It's hard to draw lines from one of those things to the effect. It's hard to draw the lines of cause and effect. We think we can do it easily, but it's not so simple. It's hard to know the counterfactual of where our life was going, were it not for this or that. It's hard to know. And so it's complicated. It's complicated. And as a temperamentally ambivalent kind of character, maybe cautious, I feel the need to speak to both sides. So, for what it's worth, yeah, appreciate your attention. And we'll pause here. I'll be away next week, see some of you, and then restart on the 24th. Okay, folks, thank you. Thank you for your attention. Please take good care of your heart and of each other, and we'll keep going.